All right, strap in, folks, because today we're diving deep, really deep, into two legal cases. And get this, both are called McIntyre v. McIntyre.
You know, it's kind of wild, right? Same name, completely different legal landscapes. We're talking two separate McIntyre cases, but worlds apart.
You got that right. It's like, imagine ordering a pizza and getting a salad instead. Same name on the menu, but a totally different experience.
Haha, love that analogy. So one of these cases, it takes us deep into family law, specifically the tricky world of grandparent visitation rights.
Right. And then the other one, buckle up for some tort law action because it tackles landowner liability, particularly that whole attractive nuisance thing.
And you know me, I'm all about finding those hidden gems, those little nuggets of legal wisdom. So by comparing these two seemingly unconnected McIntyre cases, we'll uncover some universal truths about the legal system, how statutes are interpreted, maybe even get a glimpse into judicial philosophy.
Sounds like a plan. Let's jump right in, shall we? Starting with that family law case, McIntyre v. McIntyre. This one landed in the North Carolina Supreme Court back in 1995. What's the story here?
Okay, so picture this. Grandparents are fighting for visitation rights to the grandkids. Seems pretty standard, right? But here's the twist. We're talking about an intact family.
Whoa, hold on. Intact. So the parents are still together.
Exactly. Still married, living under the same roof, no messy custody battles going on. And that's what makes this case so unique.
I can already see where this is going. Usually these grandparent visitation cases pop up when parents are split up.
Yeah.
So how did the grandparents even try to make a case here? What was their legal strategy?
Well, they decided to hang their hat on a specific North Carolina law. It's NCGS section 5013.1A, which deals with, you guessed it, grandparent visitation.
Ah, but there's got to be a but here, right?
Big but. That law, the way it's written, only gives grandparents the right to sue for visitation when there's already a custody dispute happening between the parents.
So basically, the grandparents were trying to jam a square peg into a round hole. They wanted to use a law meant for custody battles in a situation where there wasn't one.
Exactly. You're catching on quick. And let me tell you, the North Carolina Supreme Court, they weren't buying it. They ruled against those grandparents, and their reasoning went beyond just the technicalities of the law.
Yeah, I bet they were worried about stepping on those parental rights. I mean, forcing visitation on parents who are united and not wanting it. That's got to be a constitutional landmine, right?
You're on fire today. The court came down hard, emphasizing that parents have this fundamental right, protected by the Constitution, to raise their kids without the state butting in. This case actually kind of foreshadowed that big Troxell v. Granville case from the U.S. Supreme Court, which solidified that whole parental rights thing.
So in a way, this North Carolina McIntyre case, it was like a warm-up act for a much bigger national debate about how far grandparent visitation rights can actually go.
Spot on. And the court's logic here, it wasn't just about shielding those parents. They were also walking on eggshells, trying to avoid any conflict with the Constitution.
Wait a second. You're talking about the constitutional avoidance doctrine, right? That's where courts try to interpret laws in a way that avoids any big constitutional showdown, right?
Bingo. You're a legal scholar in the making. The court basically said, look, if we interpret this law so broadly that it covers intact families, well, we're going to be stepping on the toes of the Constitution. Let's just stick to what the lawmakers clearly intended and avoid a whole constitutional mess, shall we?
Smart move. Sidestepping a legal crisis right there.
Yeah.
So what are the big takeaways from all this for our listeners? I know we've got a lot of lawyers and future lawyers tuned in. What should they be scribbling in their legal notebooks?
Oh, this case is a treasure trove, let me tell you. First off, statutory interpretation, it's everything. This case proves that a single word, like custody dispute, can make or break your entire case.
It's like every word is a legal trap waiting to be sprung.
Exactly. And secondly, it shows that even a seemingly small local case can have huge implications for the national legal landscape, especially when we're talking about those big fundamental rights.
So basically, never underestimate the power of a small case.
You got it.
All right. I'm ready for a change of pace. Let's trade in those family court dramas for some motorcycle helmets and head over to Tennessee for our tort law adventure.
All right. Let's hit the road. All right, welcome back to our double dose of McIntyre v. McIntyre. We just wrapped up that wild family law case from North Carolina, and now get ready to switch gears. We're heading to Tennessee, land of country music and tort law showdowns.
Sounds like my kind of road trip. So fill me in, what's the deal with this Tennessee McIntyre case?
This one takes us back to 1976, a simpler time, maybe, but the legal issues, not so simple. We've got a 14-year-old boy, a motorcycle, an unfortunate accident, and a whole lot of questions about how far a landowner's liability actually goes. And you know what plays a starring role in this whole thing?
Let me guess. Attractive nuisance. I've heard that term thrown around in law school, but to be honest, it always sounded a bit like a legal riddle wrapped in a philosophical puzzle.
You're not wrong. Attractive nuisance, it's one of those legal concepts that sparked endless debate. It really boils down to this question. How responsible are landowners for preventing harm to kids who might be lured onto their property by something that seems, well, attractive, but could also be dangerous?
Okay, I'm starting to see the picture, but before we get lost in the legal weeds, paint me a picture of what actually happened in this case.
Okay, imagine this rural Tennessee, wide open spaces, rolling hills that seem to go on forever. You know, the kind of landscape that just begs to be explored, especially if you happen to be a 14-year-old with a motorcycle.
I can see where this is going.
Well, this particular property, it had those irresistible rolling hills, and our young motorcycle enthusiast, he was allowed to ride there. But then, during one of his adventures, bam, he collides with another kid, and the result? A serious eye injury.
Oh man, that's rough. So I'm guessing the injured boy's family decided to sue the landowner, right? They'd probably claim those rolling hills were like an irresistible siren song to a kid on a motorcycle.
You got it. The plaintiffs argued that the property itself, just by its very nature, created this unreasonable risk of harm, especially to kids who, you know, have a need for speed. They were pointing the finger at those hills, saying they were just too tempting to resist.
But the Tennessee Supreme Court, they weren't buying it, were they? I seem to remember something about those God's topography folks weighing in on this case.
You've got a good memory. The court ultimately sided with the landowner and their reasoning. It all came down to a strict reading of that attractive nuisance doctrine. See, for attractive nuisance to apply, the injured party has to be a trespasser.
Right. Makes sense. But in this case, the kid had permission to be on the property, so he wasn't trespassing. That seems like a pretty open and shut case for the landowner.
Well, not so fast. The court didn't stop there. They went on to make a statement that's become kind of legendary in legal circles. They said, and I quote, "God's topography cannot be considered an attractive nuisance."
Wait, hold up. God's topography. I'm intrigued, but honestly, a bit confused. Break that down for me.
Basically, they were drawing a line in the line between what nature creates and what humans create. They argued that landowners shouldn't be on the hook for accidents that happen because of natural features, even if those features are, you know, kind of alluring to kids, as long as those features aren't like super dangerous or anything.
Okay, so no matter how tempting those rolling hills might have been, the court wasn't going to label them as inherently dangerous. It's like they were saying, look, nature's got a nature. We can't expect landowners to reshape the entire landscape just to prevent every possible scrape or bruise.
You're getting it. And to drive their point home even further, the court pointed out that this kid, he wasn't a little tyke. He was 14 years old and, get this, licensed to operate a motorcycle. So their logic was, if you're old enough to get a license, you're old enough to understand the risks that come with riding a motorcycle.
Makes sense, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're talking about a toddler wandering onto a construction site here.
Right. And that focus on the boy's age and his license, it really chipped away at the argument that the landowner was somehow to blame for this accident.
Okay, I'm following you so far. But I gotta be honest, this whole God's topography thing, it makes me wonder, are there any loopholes here? Could a landowner who's not exactly being careful just try to claim that any dangerous condition on their property is simply part of nature's grand design and therefore not their problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. And trust me, it's one that legal scholars and courts are still wrestling with today. It really highlights this ongoing tension between protecting landowners and keeping people safe, especially when kids are involved.
All right, welcome back to the final stretch of our deep dive into the fascinating world of McIntyre v. McIntyre. We've gone from those heart-wrenching grandparent battles in North Carolina to those rolling hills and tricky tort questions down in Tennessee.
It's been quite a journey, hasn't it? We've explored parental rights, landowner liability, even pondered the legal mysteries of God's topography. Who knew two cases with the same name could take us to such different legal landscapes?
I know, right? It's like we've been on a legal road trip, exploring the highways and byways of the American legal system. But you know, as we wrap up this double feature, I'm really curious about the lasting impact of these McIntyre cases. Like,
yeah.
How have they shaped the way courts think about these issues? Have they sparked any big legal debates or influenced any other court decisions?
Think of it this way. Each case is like a pebble tossed into a pond, right? Those ripples, they spread out further and further.
Ooh, I like that. So let's trace those ripples, starting with that North Carolina case, the one about grandparents fighting for visitation rights, even though the parents were still together.
Right. That case really put a spotlight on the whole tug of war between grandparents wanting to be involved in their grandkids' lives and parents wanting to call the shots when it comes to raising their kids.
And the North Carolina Supreme Court, they came down pretty hard on the side of the parents, right? They basically said, hands off, unless those parents are unfit.
Yeah.
So did that decision set some kind of legal precedent for other courts dealing with similar situations?
Oh, absolutely. That case is like a cornerstone for all those parental rights cases that came after. It's been cited all over the place, not just in North Carolina, but in other states too. It's like the go-to case when courts are trying to figure out just how far those grandparent visitation rights can go.
Wow. So even though it was a state court decision, its impact has reached far beyond North Carolina.
You got it. It's not just about geography, though. That case also had a big influence on legal thinking. It really helped solidify the idea that parental rights are like this sacred thing protected by the Constitution.
And wasn't there that Supreme Court case, Troxell v. Granville, that also dealt with grandparent visitation? I bet the North Carolina McIntyre case had some influence on that decision.
Oh, for sure. Troxell v. Granville basically took those principles from the North Carolina McIntyre case and ran with them, taking it to the national level. It's amazing how a well-argued case from one state can have such a big ripple effect on the whole country's legal system.
It's like watching those legal dominoes fall, one after another. Each case builds on the ones that came before it.
Exactly. And that's what makes studying law so fascinating. It's not just about memorizing a bunch of rules. It's about understanding how those rules get shaped and reshaped through this constant back and forth in the courts.
Like this living, breathing thing, right? The law, it's constantly changing, adapting to the world around it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Now, let's swing back to that other McIntyre case, the one from Tennessee, where we got into that whole attractive nuisance debate and the limits of a landowner's responsibility.
Yeah, that one definitely got us thinking, especially with that whole God's topography thing. But seriously, how has that case shaped the way courts view landowner liability in general?
Well, that Tennessee case, with its memorable language and that emphasis on the difference between what nature creates and what humans create, it's had a pretty big influence on how we think about who's responsible when someone gets hurt on someone else's property. It really reinforced this idea that landowners shouldn't automatically be held liable for every single accident that happens on their land.
So it's not like a strict liability kind of situation.
You got it. Just because someone trips and falls on your property, it doesn't mean you're automatically at fault. And when it comes to natural features, like those rolling hills we talked about, the bar for proving negligence is set even higher. That Tennessee case made it crystal clear we can't expect landowners to bulldoze every hill or chop down every tree just to eliminate any possibility of someone getting hurt. It's just not practical.
And it kind of makes sense, right? I mean, from a policy standpoint, we don't want people to be afraid to own land or to share their land with others just because they're worried about getting sued.
Exactly. But this doesn't mean that landowners are completely off the hook, right? If there's something super dangerous on their property, even if it's natural, they can't just ignore it.
Yeah, they've got to at least warn people about the danger, right? Or try to make it safer somehow. It's all about finding that balance between individual freedom and keeping people safe.
Nailed it. And just like that family law case, the Tennessee McIntyre case has been cited in tons of other cases, shaping how courts think about landowner liability across the country. It's become this landmark case in the ongoing conversation about how far a landowner's responsibility should extend.
So both of these McIntyre cases, even though they dealt with totally different situations and legal issues, they've left a pretty big mark on the legal world.
They've made judges think differently, sparked some important legal debates, and basically created this framework for how we analyze these complicated legal questions that are still relevant today.
You know, as we wrap up, it really hits me. The law isn't this fixed, unchanging thing. It's constantly evolving, reflecting all the changes happening in our society.
It's like a mirror, right? Reflecting who we are and how we're trying to navigate this crazy thing called life. And these McIntyre cases, they offer this amazing glimpse into how that legal evolution happens.
They remind us that the law is more than just a bunch of rules. It's a reflection of who we are as a society. They make us think about the balance between individual rights and responsibility to each other.
Exactly. And they encourage us to keep talking, to keep questioning, and to keep striving for a legal system that's fair and meets the needs of our constantly changing world.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling pretty inspired. Who knew two cases called McIntyre v. McIntyre could lead to such a thought-provoking discussion?
It's been a pleasure diving into these cases with you.
And to all our listeners, thanks for joining us on this legal adventure. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have.
We encourage you to keep exploring, keep asking those tough questions, and keep those legal conversations going. The more we understand about the law, the better equipped we are to navigate its twists and turns and advocate for a more just world.
That's it for this episode of The Deep Dive. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.